Good afternoon and welcome to today's Friday Report. My name's Matt White and I'm in for Lucy Morgan this afternoon. And today I'm joined by Carl Feeney, who's reignited the debate about the fixed link to the mainland. Also with me this afternoon, I've got Kevin Smith, Chief Executive of the Isle of Wight Chamber of Commerce, Deborah Gardner, Chair of the Isle of Wight Labour Party, as well as a former Isle of Wight councillor and current Brading Town Mayor, and Richard Priest, the Isle of Wight councillor and Shanklin Town councillor. We'll be talking about the stories in the news this week, predominantly the fixed link, and you can take part in today's show. As a reminder, give us a call on 822002 or tweet your questions to our panel to @iWightRadio.
The Friday Report, getting to the heart of island issues. Isle of Wight Radio. This is the Friday Report.
Good afternoon and welcome back to today's Friday Report. We're kicking off this afternoon with the talk of the fixed link. Now, more details were revealed this week. An idea to build a tunnel from Arrowton to Titchfield. That's between Fareham and Southampton. Estimated cost, £1 billion. And also the scheme includes a monorail. We're going to start with Carl Feeney. Carl's reignited the fixed link debate with friend Kevin Price. Carl, it's a grand plan, but is it realistic?
Oh, yeah. Everything's realistic if you have the money to build.
£1 billion. Who's got £1 billion to build a tunnel?
It wasn't actually me that suggested it was £1 billion. It was the county press that suggested it was £1 billion. They did actually ask me, they said, how much is this going to cost? And I said, I've got no idea, really. It's going to be expensive. Anything that involves that amount of engineering is going to be expensive. And then they suggested the £1 billion, and I said, well, you know, that's the sort of ballpark figure you're probably thinking of. So then they put £1 billion in.
It's crazy, such a talking point, but it does seem that it's just a bit of an idea that doesn't have a huge amount of substance to it. There's no costing, there's a lot of other analysis and work that needs to be
course.
Done.
Yeah, of course, yeah, that's right. Well, Kev and I first went to Andrew Turner with the Ministry of Transport letter, which explained that there was a $6 billion fund, which is available up to the year 2020, I think. And this year's allocation, I think, of $2 billion may have been already used up, but then you can apply for next year's allocation. And with that, we asked, would there be any possibility to have a referendum and see if people would like to have a fixed link or not, just to actually finalise it once and for all, do we want to have a fixed link or not? And we were told to go away and find out what people thought, if they did think, if we got the consensus back that there was a lot of people for it, majority for it, he'd be interested in having a referendum. He didn't have any. He wasn't a pro. He wasn't anti Andrew Turner at all. He just said, "Yep, okay, referendum's the fairest way. Go away." And then I started up the forum, which is the Fixed Link referendum debate, the Isle of Wight Fixed Link referendum debate forum on Facebook. We've got nearly 5,000 members now. And that's for anti-fixed link and pro-fixed link people. So the debate continues, and we're understanding what people's fears are for a fixed link and kind of taking those on board and trying to find solutions.
The referendum, Carl, already that costs money to stage a referendum.
Yeah.
The Isle of Wight Council certainly doesn't have any money. We can't even afford to run public toilets. So where's the money going to come from for a referendum in the first stage?
Well, the hope was that it could be tacked onto the general election in May. Everyone would be going to the election locations, and that would just be a good way of maybe having a box outside and having it regulated, obviously, so it's fair and democratic, and then that would cost obviously a lot less, but it appears as though that's not possible now, judging by an email we had from the council.
Does that mean now that having had that email from the council and they basically said that they weren't prepared to cost up a referendum, is this over and done with already?
Oh, no. No, definitely not. No. You know, it's a campaign to have a referendum. And a referendum is democratic. To have it said to you that you cannot have a referendum, which is democratic, is... it goes against the grain of what our society is about. If a lot of people in an area are wanting to have something, and that's the electorate, those are the people that elect the council and the MP to have a voice for them, and then you can't have the voice because the referendum is impossible, that, I would say, is undemocratic.
Okay, there's no question it's caused a bit of a stir. Isle of Wight Radio's been out this morning and spoken to a few people about their thoughts on the fixed link.
I think that it's a non-starter anyway. Personally, I much prefer travelling on the hovercraft because it's 10 minutes a day on the water. It's easy for me because it's straight door to door. And I think there's far more quality of life, actually.
I just like the ferry. I don't think a fixed link is appropriate.
I think that should be more frequent, tell you the truth. I've got to wait an hour and a half now.
I disagree because they just cut them short on the winter period and there's still like plenty of traffic here still waiting to get on.
Yeah, I would be interested in the link, fixed link. Well, make life easier, cheaper, waiting for a ferry, you'd be able to go straight across the bridge.
Kevin Smith, Chief Executive of the Isle of Wight Chamber of Commerce, sitting here, right now, yes or no to a fixed link?
I don't think it's a simple yes or no. I think what Carl's doing is facilitating debate. And debate is very good because it keeps our cross-zonal operators on their toes. I think this is a hypothetical debate. It happens every 5 to 10 years. I've looked at Carl's proposals and if you have a look at the website. It's an interesting website, especially if you like engineering. But it is hypothetical because the cost of a fixed link is cost prohibitive. You will not get the funding to pay for the significant cost of setting this up. And I say that because if you look at Øresund, the tunnel bridge between Denmark and Sweden, that was built in 2000 or 4 years, opened in 2000. It cost 3.9 billion back then. It's 7.5 miles long. The conversation here is about a 13-mile link. At today's cost, that would be 6.9 billion. The cost, it's who's going to pay for it. So, but if you use the example that perhaps the County Press gave, which was £1 billion cost for a reduced link, and you manage to secure public funding for it, say 50%, you've still got a black hole of £500 million. So I applaud you for starting up a conversation in this cycle, which has been going on over 100 years. But I think that we need to actually focus on the services that we've currently got, bearing in mind that the services that are provided by the commercial operators are very good services. And I think the conversation is more about the subsidy that we can get from government to support cross-zonal sailings in out-of-period or downtime. So areas where the local ferry companies struggle to fund that particular service. So I think it's supporting our ferry companies through a campaign to national government to subsidise the cross-zonal
Based on your thoughts about the fixed link, It would appear on what you've said that the Isle of Wight Chamber of Commerce, or certainly you, don't take the fixed link debate terribly seriously on the basis that you don't think there'll ever be the money for it.
Yeah, it's not that we don't take it seriously. It's that it's the cost. You know, the European Commission have a structural fund. And a lot of what they ask there is around sort of the budget. So they provide a grant of between 50 and 75% for what they consider to be serious transport projects. And serious is between 25 million and 50 million euros. So what we're talking about is a super project. And Denmark and Sweden did a super project that cost $3.95 billion back in 2000, as I say. Who's going to fund such a super project? So I think our focus has got to be on the fabulous service that we've got now from the commercial operators and enhancing that to support the island's business community and residents through a campaign of subsidy, which is the way to go.
I would imagine that you had quite a number of businesses coming to you actually in support of a fixed link with the idea of the benefit to them. What's the case? What are the business community saying on the Isle of Wight?
As I said at the start, it's a hypothetical conversation. So it's a fabulous conversation in the pub, in the club, around the dinner table. You've got to look
at... But it's not hypothetical, Kevin, because in a sense we've got a website, we've got a plan, we've got a design... This is very much a talking point, so people don't treat it as hypothetical. The way some of the comments have been made so far is that this could happen. But you're saying it won't.
It's the funding required to build such a to build a project of this nature would be significant, and the $6 billion that Carl spoke about was the transport fund for the entire country, based over 6 years. So that's £1 billion a year over 6 years. So and this project would cost far more than that, and it's who would fund that.
Carl, bring you back in on that point. Okay. Smith doesn't think it's going to happen. It's hypothetical.
Well, I think that's fairly defeatist, really. If we all thought that that was going to be the case, the Wright brothers would never have taken off in a plane, for a start. No, you couldn't possibly fly. You know, nobody will ever be able to fly, you know, and that's the defeatist sort of attitude. But if you put a business plan together with an income coming in from a fixed link, you can actually attract private equity funds. Bonds and gilts and banks are offered, and investors will buy these bonds on the backing of a guaranteed income. And you will have guaranteed income on a fixed link. And just a quick add up and tally of what we have deemed to be fair fares, going backwards and forwards. And we put that those onto the forum as well about 2 weeks prior to the website was made. And we asked, do you think these fares are fair? And a couple of people came back, said no, horse boxes shouldn't be £80 return, they should be £40 return. So we changed it to £40 return, and that was pretty much it. Everything else seemed very fair, and you can see those on the business side of the website. And if you tally it up, it comes to around $160 million a year income. Now, if you offer that to a private equity, they can. They'll offer you, okay, we'll give you the money to build this. You give us 5% of that each year. I'm just picking figures, you know. this isn't an exact science, but this is how business operates. And
I'm just going to bring you into the conversation.
And you can borrow $3 billion just like that. And then you've got the infrastructure fund as well on top of that. You know, to be as defeatist and say it's a hypothetical project, when you've got those numbers that do actually stack up, I think, you know, really...
Carl, we'll come back to the point you're making. Richard, try coming in from an Isle of Wight council perspective, and certainly from your perspective, very pro-Isle of Wight person, your thoughts on the fixed link?
I think it's really good to open up the debate. I think a lot of islanders, residents, businesses and people coming to the island have got massive concerns. Kevin's right to highlight that the actual proposal is cost prohibitive, and I think the pragmatic way forward is to support this subsidy to get to the island and to get off the island for island residents and obviously for businesses to try and make sure that it's more viable. I think the debate, and Carl's really opened up that debate, as Kevin said, it's on a cycle basis, and I've lived here all my life and I've seen that cycle. I've seen the transition when SeaLink run the service as a service. Now it's a business. Massive transformation. There's a quality improvement massively, but there's also been cost prohibitive, if you like, from some of the service providers, because they're going to be hit by on costs. And I think that's an issue that Carl has really done right to ignite debate. And I think we need to be working together to try and address the subsidy issue, because that's the benefit for the island, residents, tourists and businesses alike.
What's your personal view? Yes or no to a fixed link?
I think it's prohibitive and I don't think it would work. And equally, I don't think it's a question just for the island. Whoever it is that's going to have this built on the mainland would have to have a view. The other providers around the country that will be going without the subsidy, because if all the money's spent on the island, there's many other places will not be happy with the Isle of Wight grabbing all those funds. So I'm quite happy if the island has a disproportionate amount of funding, but other places won't be so happy. So I think it's really unlikely to go ahead. And the best way forward is for us all to work together to harness what Carl and the people in the network are really saying about supporting subsidies for the island.
And in terms of the local authority, we heard at the meeting recently that the council's supporting an infrastructure motion to actually develop the transport system across the Isle of Wight, which includes subsidies for the ferries, road network, etc. Steam train was mentioned. Does that mean that the fixed link isn't really entering into the council's debate in terms of improving our transport system here?
I'm not aware of that sort of element of the debate. The debate is focusing upon improving the infrastructure, protecting the infrastructure we've got. The rail line to Shanklin is a vital lifeblood to tourism all along the southeast corridor of the Isle of Wight. That's critical for hotels, tourism and other businesses. It's critical for people getting up to London. And that connection is something we need to protect. That's more immediate. I totally support whatever solution we can have going down the road in terms of making the cross-Solent crossing more affordable, whichever route you choose, but we need to protect it. It is our lifeblood, and we've already seen this week in terms of the West Wight, in terms of the crossing from Yarmouth to Lymington. That's being changed next year because of the impact it's got on the island in terms of the economy, and I think we need to be working together to make sure we've got an all-island solution. The other bit I would just say, if we did have a fixed link, and the potential of that is that the ferry companies no longer operate, we would be in the hands of a monopoly supplier. So the potential for an operator of a single link would be quite huge, and there would be a potential consequence to the island. And the risk, as we've seen with road shutting, if that went down at any time, how would you get off island? So I think there's a lot of issues here that need to be explored further.
Deborah Gardner, Town Mayor of Brading, Chair of the Isle of Wight Labour Party. Brading itself, it's on the main rail network for the island line. Among the scheme that's been proposed includes a monorail. So would that have a negative impact on Brading if perhaps more people would choose to use a monorail system rather than the island line?
No, I don't think so. I think Brading is very well connected, and we'd be happy if the rest of the island was as well connected as we are. I think this is a really key debate, and I think it's absolutely essential to separate the two things out of can we afford it and should we do it. And I think we get the two things too bound up too frequently, and one kind of silences the other. So I think this idea of a referendum, whether or not we can afford it, is really important, and I'm disappointed to hear that the Isle of Wight Council's closed that down, because we've never actually had a proper discussion on whether we want a fixed link or not. It's a very polarising debate. Endlessly, people have arguments about it, cyclical, as you say. But we've never actually had a sensible debate where you're not accused of being anti-islander if you're for a fixed link, which, you know, if you don't like it here, why don't you leave? That kind of negative, polarising debate we have had. We've never had a sensible debate where you've been able to put your views forward and then decide. And then once we've decided, do we want it or not, we can then move on to can we do it? And I think there's a huge amount of policy areas to discuss how it will impact on the island. Will it improve our economy because we're able to get more teachers, social workers, more professional people over, more active businesses? Or will it just make us a dormitory town as people can afford to live on the mainland but have a second home on the island? So that kind of teasing out that kind of debate is really, really crucial. And I'm really, really glad that you've done this. However, I would like to take issue with something that Kevin said when he says about the fantastic services that commercial services provide. I don't think most people on the island feel that we get a fantastic service from Whitelink or Redfunnel. I think we feel quite ripped off quite often. And so I will take issue with that. And I know your organisation is sponsored by them, so you have to take a more positive view than I might. But absolutely, I think people do not feel happy with the level of service they get from Whitelink and Redfunnel. And that, I think, is driving a lot of this debate.
Kevin, I'll bring you in on that point.
not a lot of people not happy with the ferry services. Yeah. What would you say to that?
Well, I think that there's an emotional argument that tends to cascade throughout the Isle of Wight. I think if you see other services, ferry services across the world, the service that we've got is very good indeed, and even the pricing is pretty good out of peak period. And you just need to start to look at what's happening elsewhere, because the pricing is comparable and is quite competitive. So if you're in Sussex commuting to London, the cost of that commute ticket is far more expensive than a commute ticket across the Solent to work on the mainland for our residents. So take away the emotion and look at some of the facts. So this is a commercial operator providing a very good commercial service, right? If there are pressures on the community, social pressures that makes it very difficult for people on low incomes to travel across the Solent, then we've got to be talking at social solutions. And that means having a conversation with government, with national government, irrespective of which party, because they've all had their share of ignoring this issue, and working to put pressure on the government to provide the subsidy for island residents that support us living on a fantastic island. And far from being negative, this island is absolutely fantastic. Its asset is that it's an island, and we've got to take that into consideration there.
Lots more debate about this. Don't forget, you can take part in the show this afternoon. Give us a call on 822002 or text us IW to space 81222 or tweet us at iWhite Radio.
The Friday Report, getting to the heart of island issues. Isle of Wight Radio.
Good afternoon, you're live on Isle of Wight Radio. Who's calling, where you're from, and who's your question to?
Yeah, hi there, it's John Keyworth. My question is to the panel in general, really, accompanied with a comment. The debate about a fixed link has been going on for the 57 years that I've been alive. What I want to know is, the fixed link is pie in the sky. It's going to happen in the future. What efforts are being put in to try and sort the ferry problems that we have now? The reduction of Yarmouth, of one more boat, the fact that you can't get off the island on Red Funnel this weekend between 3 o'clock and 7 o'clock. The system's wrong. It needs sorting. What do these four panellists think should be done to put it right?
Kevin Smith, start with you. What's the answer with the ferries? Cutting services, cutting fares?
Well, the issue here is that you know, the commercial operators are operating in a commercial way, and as I previously said, that in order to provide the island community with a 24-hour service that can be easily accessed at any time of the day, we need subsidy for that because it needs to be paid for, thinking on this is that we need to lobby central government far more proactively and work through our MP to make that happen.
Carl, bring you back in. Is enough being done? Are you disappointed with what you've heard from the Chamber this afternoon?
Well, I think their hands are tied to a certain extent, and they can only work with their policies and what they've got. So, you know, I do sympathise with Kevin. But here it says on our Department of Transport letter, the ferry services are run by commercial businesses which must ensure that the services are viable to continue their operations. The setting of fare rates for residents is a matter of the operator of the service as a private commercial company. It would not be appropriate for central government to legislate a rate of fare which could make the service less able to adapt to changing circumstances. So basically they're saying that government will not be able to entertain buying out the companies because they're private enterprise. They've got shareholders. You buy out a private enterprise and you have to pay a premium for the shares. You cannot do it.
Deborah Garner, bring you in. We know that Andrew Turner, he's been talking about the ferries in Parliament recently. Is the MP doing enough?
Well, if Andrew's been talking about ferries in Parliament recently, there must be a general election on the horizon, because it seems to come round kind of cyclically, like the fixed link debate. You sit there long enough and every 4 or 5 years, Andrew will start getting very agitated about the ferries, and then he'll forget about it for the next 4 years, which might be a harsh characterisation, but I think that's the way it feels sometimes. That it's when it's politically convenient, it's taken up. I think he should have done more and should be doing more. One of the things that interests me about the letter you just read out was the fact they're saying they can't prescribe fares, etc., because it's a private company. One of the things that we've been thinking about a bit in the Labour Party is whether or not we should look into kind of like franchising, because they can prescribe fares to rail companies and they're private companies. So if you can do it in one area, why can't you in another? And so better regulation and franchising is something that I would certainly think that we should be thinking about and looking at. We have endless petitions to refer it to the Competition Commission, Monopolies Commission, etc., but they never seem to get anywhere, and then we seem to accept that as the answer.
I think that's because what I just said, you know, you can't do anything about it. They're a private company.
But so is a rail company, so is Virgin, but they still tell them what their fares are.
I think they were national companies originally, weren't they? The rail lines were national companies originally, and they had contractual obligations to their customers.
John Keyworth, if it was up to you, what would you do?
Huh, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? I think we need somehow to lobby government and any of the other regulatory bodies out there to get subsidies for the ferry companies. FixLink, personally, I'm against it. However, it may well come one day when there is the money around. We all know the money isn't around at the moment, and to start the debate at this time is probably the right thing to do. But we need to sort these ferries out, and somehow legislation has to be found, or maybe somebody needs to come in who can run it at a profit for the people of the island.
John, thanks very much for joining us this afternoon. Go to Richard Priest. What's the Isle of Wight Council doing to tackle the ferry companies?
I know that last year there was an awful lot of effort put in to try and sort of raise this issue. But I think picking up one of the Carl's points, quite interesting, as Debbie said, if you look back how the ferries originally operated, they were part of the railway network when they were SeaLink. So that was the opportunity they should have done to regulate it. I think there's an opportunity there to look at regulation, how more pressure can be put to bear on that. I think that's a good way of which we can work together to apply pressure to get the outcome everyone wants. I think there's another factor that we didn't touch upon in terms of if there was a FixLink that you build. If you look at all the debate currently with the offshore wind farms, if you put a building up in the middle of the Solent, there'd be an awful lot of environmentalists kicking off. No, but there's an awful lot of people that would have a rage range of debate. I think the debate's got to focus on the subsidy, actually what we can do to get an integrated service here to line up things. I think, like Kevin, I think there's been improvements. I remember as a student going over in the sort of 60s and 70s to Portsmouth, the service was half an hour long. Now it's about half that duration, about a quarter of an hour. And I remember in the middle of winter having to travel on top of a car ferry that was converted with a bus on top so passengers could sit on the bus for the duration of a journey. That doesn't happen anymore. There is major progress happened. That requires investment, but there is a cost. And because they're commercial services, there is a cost that the customer has to pay. The subsidy, putting pressure on for downtime, that's got to be the way forward for the island, for residents and for people coming to the island, because that cross Solent route is our lifeblood.
We keep hearing about pressure on the ferry companies, but it seems to be like words. I don't see what's being done. I don't see the ferry companies actually changing much. I mean, Kevin, we've had business people on the Isle of Wight come to us and say, it costs too much for me to get over to the mainland to deliver goods, or... And that's just one example. You know, what more can we do to actually say, there's no doubt about it, the fares are an issue, and a lot of people are saying it's too expensive.
Firstly, just coming back to Deborah's point that the ferry company sponsored the chamber, they've sponsored a business award, but they sponsor lots of initiatives across the island, so they actually don't fund the Isle of Wight Chamber of Commerce. Plus, secondly, we've had many a debate and many disagreement with the ferry companies over the year. over the years. So, you know, we're not afraid to talk to the ferry companies and have a serious conversation. And I think this is coming back to my first original opening comment about Carl's campaign, current campaign, opening up this debate again is good for the island, because it enables us to once again have conversations with the ferry companies to make sure that they're actually giving the absolute best deals they possibly can in a commercial environment to our island residents. But we've got to do more than that as well. We have to have that wider conversation with government.
Carl, I'll come back to you in a sec. We're just going to hear from Stuart Brown. Now, Stuart's behind the Fix Ferries, Not Fix Link campaign that's on social media at the moment.
My name is Stuart Brown. I'm a civil servant. I live in Ryde on the Isle of Wight, and I am the organiser of the Facebook group Fix the Ferries First, Not a Fix Link. I think there are too many unknowns. We've seen no supporting evidence to suggest crime wouldn't rise, as I believe it would. I believe there's a real threat to our hospital closing if there was a Fix Link. I think that tourism wouldn't really be overly affected. People coming by tunnel, I don't think, would increase any more than people coming by boat. I think there's a chance of more day trippers, but then again, day trippers aren't going to use hotels that people coming by ferry currently use. So I think there's a lot of uncertainty, and there's a lot of belief from people in our campaign that there are no guarantees with a Fix Link.
And Stuart's been in touch with us on Twitter this afternoon, and it's a question for Carl. Why does he ban people from his Facebook group that oppose a Fix Link then? And it's based on what? His website shows no statistical data or evidence. This is all hypothetical fantasy. Your response?
Why have I banned people?
That's the question from Stuart Brown on Twitter. Why have you banned people opposing the Fix Link?
Well, I've banned four people.
And why have you banned those four people, Carl?
Well, three of them, admittedly, were anti-FixLink, but they were particularly abusive. And one of them was the guy called Leaf, who helped Stuart set his thing up. And Leaf was being particularly obstructive on the forum, and he was putting putting e-petitions everywhere. On there, and it became competitive. Other people would put three yes e-petitions to one no e-petition. So I contacted Leaf privately on a PM, private message on Facebook, because I had his details, and I said, Leaf, could you refrain from putting the e-petitions on? And I did this twice, and I said, it would be a shame to lose you, but that is the forum policy. We need to keep this a debate. If you want to debate, that's great, but please refrain from putting the e-petitions on. I asked him twice. And then he did it again. So I thought, well, a third time, you know, three strikes and you're out. So I banned him.
Well, Leaf's obviously not here to respond to what you're saying. But can you give assurances to people on your group if they want to put a viewpoint across,
what else?
Pro or con, it'll be listened to on the page.
Of course. We've got 5,000, nearly 5,000 members on there. And it's been going for 3 weeks, and the four people have been banned. One of them was a pro-link, campaign or whatever you want to call it. But he was abusive to a couple of the people, a bit of swearing going on. And our policy is no swearing, no personal abuse, no e-petitions. And if you do that, I haven't banned anybody just without not getting in touch with them. Give them a personal message. Could you tone it down, or could you just stop doing something? Just debate. Fair debate is what we're here for. And then if they do it again, I know Leaf, so I think he thought that he could get away with it.
Because, sure. In terms of the debate, though, so far the debate largely has been on the internet, online, on social media. Deborah Gardner, in terms of whether we may or may not ever have a referendum on this issue, what can be done at maybe sort of town and parish council level in terms of giving people the opportunity to take part in this debate that you're all agreeing is a positive step? But not everyone's on the internet, not everyone's online, not everyone has access to be part of that. So should there be anything more done, perhaps at town and parish council level, to invite people to get involved?
Absolutely, and I think the town and parish councils have a real role to play in any debate on how the island is run. And I think the links between the Isle of Wight Council and town and parish councils are really important in facilitating this kind of debate if we're going to seriously think about having a referendum. In fact, I think it's the only way we can do it is through the ordinary democratic processes. I know, I was obviously on the side of there being a no vote for the independence in Scotland vote, but you can see there how an issue can absolutely revitalise a democracy, and the yes versus no campaign in Scotland had people getting involved with politics that had no interest in politics for the last, all their lives, and suddenly this actually revitalised politics in Scotland. And I think this is the kind of issue that will spark off huge debate here on the island. And I think town and parish councils, the Isle of Wight Council, all kinds of community groups have got a role to play in making sure that the discussion is held in the right tone as well. Because I entirely agree, if people are abusive online, they should not be part of your group, because that puts off other people who just want to come along and have their say and don't want to be... to be part of some kind of vitriolic discussion. And I think keeping the debate on a really pleasant level. I mean, obviously,
debate.
Yes, people don't feel that I can't speak out because I'm too scared. Will be useful, I think, in the future. And I'd love to see public meetings, all kinds of events going on to talk about it, to come to a conclusion either way. Then we can say it was a yes, we're going to go and see what we can find to finance it, or it was a no, let's just put that to bed for the next...
Deal with it.
Yeah.
And Kevin, in terms of the Chamber, can it do more to actually say to the ferries, look, this is the issue... What can you do to help us, to help perhaps resolve this problem of high fares, service issues? What's the Chamber actually doing to engage with those companies?
That is a part of our day-to-day role, and we're in regular communication with the ferry companies, and they know that this particular issue is very hot. They're acutely aware of it as an issue, and they do a lot to try to resolve that, i.e. like hover travel, investing up to £10 million in two new craft. Now, what we also forget is that the cross-island operators employ a lot of people. So, people's livelihoods are at stake within those organisations just as much as they are on the Isle of Wight. So it is about that mature conversation with our on-island operators and our on-island business community, and plus the wider community, because it all impacts. And our role is to facilitate those discussions, ongoing discussions. They don't stop.
And Richard, if it's not going to be a fixed link, if we can put more pressure on subsidies for ferries to improve the service, is that going to happen, and when? Because we keep talking about it. This has been an issue now for several years. It's probably why Carl's led to the extent of actually putting together a proposal for a fixed link. But when's there going to be this change? When's something going to happen?
You're absolutely right. I think putting pressure on has got to be the way forward. We've got to up the ante. Last year, the council, through scrutiny, actually held to account all the ferry operators and the cross Solent. So there was a real held to account. There was improvements. There was better communication. But I think you touched on earlier, and Debbie's absolutely right. Town and parishes, certainly along the railway line, if you like, and that link through Portsmouth, have got a role to play. I think everyone's got to work together to raise the ante. But again, I think as Debbie touched on, if you think this year, 150 years the railways have been open, which has been dependent on the fix, the link arrangement with Hampshire, there is a history to it. It is sustainable, but we've got to do more to make it viable, cost-effective and affordable for island people, because that is our lifeblood. And if we don't protect it and nurture it and look after it, we could be at real risk in the future.
Sure. Carl, back to you. The Hampshire Wildlife Trust have been in touch to say that the tunnel proposal would have a negative impact on wildlife on the Isle of Wight and indeed in Southampton. And they make a point of actually singing out squirrels, deer, mink that would be affected by it. You're laughing, so you obviously don't take that terribly seriously.
Well, I am, but I've heard lots of stuff like that. I take it seriously, but I don't think it's a serious problem, because what do the ferries do to stop any squirrels from coming over on the ferries? Well, what contingencies as they made.
There is no question that whether this actually ever gets off the ground, whether or not a tunnel is ever built, these are going to be issues that we're faced with.
There's lots.
Environmental impact, wildlife impact, and indeed, I mean, has anyone spoken to residents in Arrowton about what they think about having a tunnel built there?
There's lots of facets to deal with, a huge amount. But the plan I put together was to through the understanding of the fears that people have on the forum, traffic for one, crime, well, I think that's pretty insulting to it. All our friends and relations that live on the mainland to think that they're all of a criminal element and have got less ethics and morals than we have on the island. I find that one fairly deplorable, really. That's scaremongering, and I think you're just grasping at straws in that case, that particular one. But there's all sorts of different facets that will need to be looked at. This idea is just an idea, you know. Traffic was a big problem that a lot of people came up with, and the monorail system makes the traffic less than it is now, because you can go from on this particular idea, you can go from Sandown to Cowes in 21 minutes and 33 seconds, and you're going to be going through lovely countryside on a monorail system. You can get off at wherever, you know, lots of different stations on the way there.
Our time is against us, Carl, we're going to have to wrap up.
But there's no traffic, you know, you don't produce traffic. If you've got one person in one car and you've got 20 people, you've got 20 cars. So that produces a lot of pollution, a lot of noise and a lot of traffic.
We're absolutely out of time. The debate will rumble on. Before we finish, a quick personal yes or no, Kevin. Yes or no to a fixed link. Don't sit on the fence. Give us an answer. Yes or no.
If it was possible.
It's cost prohibitive.
Possible. So that's no. Richard Priest.
No.
Deborah Gardner.
I don't do yes or no questions. Maybe is my answer. I'm sorry. I won't be kind of forced down that route. Maybe.
And Carl. Well, we obviously know what you're going to say.
Well, obviously yes, but in the meantime, just like these guys are saying, we have to get the ferries to be fair. And, the Isle of Wight, the islanders just
We're out
need...
of time. We're absolutely out of time. We've got to say thank you very much to the four of you for coming in this afternoon and taking part in today's Friday Report. Thanks very much.
The Friday Report. Getting to the heart of island issues. Isle of Wight Radio.